Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. I am so happy and excited about today's guest. She is someone, I would say she is the person who me and my husband and my friends and my sister share the most. She really puts the no-nonsense into parenthood, into being a woman, and she just makes me howl. I'm so pleased that she's here. Hello and welcome to the podcast, Victoria Eames.
Hello, that was the nicest introduction ever.
Ah, it's
Thank
so true.
You.
Sometimes Tom's actually tried, the first time he sent me one of your videos, and I can't remember which one it was now, but he sent me one, like, I didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
Like, I was unaware. I was like, dude, she's one of
mine. She's my mate, all right? She's my friend, actually, Tom. Yeah.
You just seem to cut through, I would say, in a different way. Like, the way that you deliver your honesty and your opinion on stuff is very different to what is already out there, and it's so refreshing and unapologetic. Do you know what I mean? You're just totally just expressing yourself in that moment in a way that is just bloody brilliant.
Oh, that's so lovely, because you know it is a funny one, isn't it? I think the thing is I never really think about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes an issue, but I never really think about the sort of effect of what I'm saying. It's just like I'm having those experiences and then I'm like, I need to get it out. I need to use it. It's like, because it's become such a platform for me,
yeah,
almost like a form of therapy to share, especially the hard stuff when yeah, you're a mum, you know. It's such a good place for it and built up such a lovely community of women on there who all just get it. Mm-hmm. And that's just been, yeah, it's been incredible for me. Just sort of validating my experience and giving me like a voice for these experiences. But yeah, making me realise that I'm not alone.
Do you think adding humour to those moments also helps?
Oh my God, yes. I don't know how we survive without laughing yeah, at the absolute carnage that having children is. It's just, yeah, it's chaos. And sometimes, I mean, sometimes it is really hilarious as well. Because I think especially when you've got little ones, because I've got two kids and one's four, one's seven, and the sort of irrational madness of my four-year-old, and she's been a challenge to raise, you know, like it's been a very different experience raising my yeah, two children. Like some of the situations that we find ourselves in with her, and you're like, seriously? You know, like her stubbornness or the things that she gets fixated on and just won't let go of that, you know, to an adult are like so ridiculous. You have to laugh because else yeah, you just go completely insane, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I absolutely love it. So let's talk about you and your childhood. Where did you grow up? How many siblings did you have? What was your relationship like with your mum and dad? All that jazz.
So I'm from London and grew up in London, in North London. And I've got three siblings, so one of four.
Ooh.
And I'm the third child.
Okay.
But the youngest girl. And we were all quite close in age. So probably, I think like the maximum amount of time between us is maybe 2.5 years. I think that's the biggest gap. And my two elder sisters are dead close together.
Right.
And yeah, it was just family life was, you know, loud and just always something going on. Very creative because my dad was an artist, filmmaker. And so there was a lot of imaginative play in the house, lots of like making things, doing clay, painting, all that sort of stuff. But then on the other hand, very strict.
Really?
Yes. Like, so because my dad was kind of this, yeah, he was like a bit of a contradiction, really. He was like so artistic and creative and free in his expression, but then so strict. So that was, that's not how I parent at all. I attempt gentle parenting, but fail miserably. I think that's probably the best description of it. But yeah, look, we had like rotas for chores, things like that. You know, like it was very regimented. And he was away quite a lot too. So my mum had four kids under the age of like six for a long time. That period of our lives, like he was away working. So she had to keep a tight ship because, you know, otherwise it would just all unravel. But I think now being part of four, I always thought, oh yeah, I'll have four kids. Nah. Not for me. It's not for me. And I look at my mum, I think, you're mad. You're actually mad. That how did you survive this? But she loved it. The thing is, my mum is like Mary Poppins. You know, she was a primary school teacher. She just took everything in her stride. She made motherhood look so easy, which
really?
I think is maybe why it was such a shock when I had my own kids. I was like, mum. You neglected to tell me that this was mental. You know?
And also when you look at people who have creative parents and stuff or do a lot of creative play and things, you can very easily think that, oh, well, that means everything's quite, you know, hippie-ish in a way, I guess, in terms of like loose bedtimes and, you know, don't worry, kids, whatever. But actually, I love the fact that for you guys, it was the total opposite. And actually, if you are a mum who is mostly raising four kids on your own, like you say, you have to keep a tight ship. You have to keep things, under
in
control,
order,
I guess,
basically.
In some way.
Yeah,
in order, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've always been like really close to my mum and dad. I did lose my dad last year, sadly. But yeah, I mean, you know, he was like such a massive influential part of my life.
Yeah.
He shaped so much of who I am, like even what I've gone into, was always into the, or, you know, I always worked in like film and before I went into doing the wankery online. and then it's felt like a huge like loss losing him. I wouldn't go to him with any parenting issues because he'd have a very different take on it to me, you know. But in terms of just my career and, you know, that reassurance that I think everyone just searches for all the time, a lot of that did come from my dad. So, yeah, that's been difficult to adjust to, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it just feels like there's a big gap now.
Also, a massive part of that is we kind of grow up thinking that our parents are invincible.
Oh, my God,
they're going to be there forever.
Yeah, we do. And I think as well, I've just turned 40, so I feel that a lot of my peers are either looking after sick parents or have lost a parent in the last couple of years. And it definitely is that time now, isn't it, of us losing our parents. And it's such a surreal experience because you just want to be back to being like a little girl, really. And you're like, oh, well, I want my dad sort of thing. But then you've got your own little kids who need you to be their mum.
Yeah.
And it's also really hard to see my mum go through this as well.
Yeah.
Because they were together from the age of 14. So, you know, that's like her entire life with this, you know, man. And then to not have him. So, yeah, that's been really difficult to sort of to know how to support her in her grief. Because I think losing a parent, it does feel like the order of things, you know, like as shit as it is, that is what happens.
Yeah.
And he wasn't my husband, was he? So to like lose your life partner like that and to just suddenly feel like you're just at sea, is that's what she's described it as. She's like, I feel like I'm at sea. and I don't know who I am anymore. It's like, that's really difficult to know what to do. And I mean, she loves, you know, going out for lunch. So I've been doing that quite a lot, trying to, like, you know, let's go do something nice. But sometimes it just feels like a distraction from the actual pain of what she's feeling, you know. But then I suppose it is. And that's all we're doing, is just distracting ourselves from the pain of it all. Wow, this is such a cheery conversation.
Don't you worry. But I think there is that thing, isn't it? When you meet someone that you're going to be with for life at a young age, and you go through all the things that are traditionally, you're told to do, you get married, you have kids, and then the kids grow up and they go, and then you reconnect with each other, and then that person goes, and that's just such a difficult thing that so many of us will face. But again, without people talking about what that moment is, you know, we will all be at sea.
I know. And she knows also, she's like 74. She's of that generation where it's not like us, where we love talking about our feelings, don't we? Yeah. And like having them validated. But she's not of that school, you know.
Well, so she's your mum. So she's probably trying to protect you in the same way that you would protect your kids.
Yeah. I mean, she always apologises if she cries. And you're like, you don't have to apologise. It's absolutely fine. Like, please just cry, because you need the space to do it. It's cathartic, you know. And I think we've all really struggled with that as the siblings. I mean, this is the thing about death, is that it does definitely bring you all closer together.
Yeah.
You know, because you end up spending a lot of time together as well, especially as he was in hospital in the last, like, stages of his life. We were there, like, every day just with him. You know, you have those, like, unwritten roles in the family. Those were sort of, like, really coming out strong with how we were dealing with the whole situation.
But also, I imagine, a comfort, because even though, you know, you might be the one in control of your household, but actually going into that situation and having an older sibling who might be in control is almost, a comfort in some way. That's your structure.
Yeah, oh, that's definitely our structure. She's bossy.
So growing up with this, you know, with the chaos of having the four kids, you know, the creative parents that you did that were also strict, did you look ahead to the future to yourself as a mum? Was having kids something that you thought, yeah, that's definitely something I'm going to do?
Absolutely. I was one of those that was like, I wanted kids from like the age of four, you know. I just, that was my main play, was playing with babies. Always wanted to be the mum, just like loved the idea. I romanticized it so much all the time. And I can remember, even as a teenager, when I was sort of like 16 with one of my best mates, and be like, oh yeah, I'm definitely want to be married and have kids by the time I'm 23. And she was like, what? It never happened, but that's what I really wanted. And then I think I misspent many years of my life with the wrong men, but just always with the idea of, like, I wanted the relationship to have the baby. That's what I was always looking for. And that didn't happen for me until I was 30. So, yeah, I got through some terrible men. And thank God I didn't have children with them. But it was always something that I wanted from day one. Definitely wanted to be a mum.
When you started to kind of go, right, we're ready now, let's start, we're going to go down that road, you know, did it take long for you to fall pregnant?
No, not at all. I think it runs in the family that we're just like fertile wenches, basically. I would have definitely have been like the woman that was just put in, given the task of birthing babies in the Victorian times. Like, that's your job.
Because you're the handmaid.
I'm the handmaid. I am the handmaid. It happened really quickly. And I think it was literally, I came off the pill and then 2 weeks later I was like pregnant. So
no.
Yeah, and I've been on the pill for so long as well. I mean, I was really bad at taking it, so that might have helped. You know, that might have actually worked in our favour. But so I got pregnant, and then it was just, it's just what I wanted. I was like so overjoyed. I was 34 when I got pregnant for the first time.
Can you remember finding out?
Yeah, I do. So we moved into this house and it was such a dump, because that's what we do. We move into dumps and then we do them up and then move out. But it was such a shithole. And you know, you like move in somewhere and then you actually get and you realise how much more of a shithole it is than you first imagined. Yeah. And you're like, fuck, how are we ever going to do this? And I'd done a little wee on the stick, and it was so faint, like almost not there. But you know, and you're like, no, I'm sure that's that. So I showed him, and he couldn't see it. So he was like, So it was the most underwhelming sort of response to, we're having a baby. And he was like, where is it? Because he's from Birmingham. I can't see a bloody thing. So basically, it was just like, oh, right, fuck you then. And then I had to wait. I just waited like till the next day and did another one. And then by that point, the chemical, whatever it is, was like strong enough to show a proper line. And then it was like, we're having a baby. And then it was just like a mad panic to try and get the house into a livable sort of state.
God, you really did have sort of a time frame to work towards.
Yeah. So that was very stressful. And I bloody tiled the bathroom at 8 months pregnant, like straddling the bath with my massive bump, doing the tiles up the walls. Like,
no.
Yeah, I wouldn't advise that. That was a stupid thing for me to do. Because then I got that bloody pelvic thing. You know when it's like your hip sockets fall out. I had that. Oh, it was horrendous. But it was definitely the bath because I was literally straddled over it with this massive belly. It's like, what have you done, you idiot? And then I just had to, I couldn't walk or anything. I had to just bounce on a ball for like 3 days just like until I could walk again. It was awful.
I mean, you would have been in full-on nesting mode as well. Yeah. So nesting mode, it's like you've done extreme makeover.
I
nesting
did.
Mode edition.
That's it. 9-month makeover.
Yeah. And going towards the birth, had you thought about it at all? You know, I was addicted to one born every minute. Like I couldn't get enough.
Oh my
it.
God. Yes, of course. Oh yes. I went hard. I went real hard. I think this is a mistake that we all make then when we get pregnant. We just focus so much on the labour.
Yeah.
And we forget that you've got a baby at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I actually had an amazing sort of experience with the care that I had and everything else.
Yeah.
My best friend had a home birth the year before. So I was like, I mean, I copy everything that she does. We've got like the same tattoos. I was like, I'm having a home birth too. Leanne's done it. I'm doing it. So I that's what I wanted to have. And then the midwifery team at the time, they had a dedicated home birth team. Did the hypnobirthing and I took it so seriously, you know, it's like I really did practice that, doing the hypnobirthing every day, and it became like so second nature. And then I did get to have a home birth, which was amazing.
What was that like? Because obviously, like, was the pool there ready the whole time? Or
so we had a pool, and the contractions were just coming so thick and fast. So we rang the midwife and was on the phone to her, and she was like, okay, sounds like you're progressing quite far. So I'm going to send the midwife around now, because no one was there.
Yeah.
Really exhausting. But yeah, and then he was born, and we just, got stitched up on the bed with a bit of gas in there. And then, then they just leave you and you're like, oh, right then, I've just got a baby now. It's such a surreal experience. And they tidy it all up. So, so you come downstairs and there's like no evidence that anything has happened. But then, see, my next labour was totally the opposite experience. The dilation bit was about 12 hours, right. And then she was born in, like, 17 minutes.
Whoa.
And it was... Oh my God.
Was that one at home as well?
That one was at home as well, yeah, because I'd already, done one. So I was like, let's do it at home. And, oh, my God, but she came out in an absolute tsunami of shit. It's more shit than anyone's ever produced, I think, in the history of shitting. It was insane. And my husband was catching it with his bare hands because I did the classic thing. And she was an hour overdue.
Right.
So she literally came. I went to labour on my due day and had the hot curry before, didn't I? Because, that's what you're like, oh, you have a hot curry then. And so, oh, Lord. And I had to go up to the toilet. We had the pool set up and everything. I was like, oh, I think I need a shit. I'm just going to go do a poo before I get the pool. Got upstairs and then was like, nah, the baby's coming. Was on all fours with my head in the toilet bowl because I was like retching from the power of her just ejaculating herself out my body. And then with just like Mr. Whippy at my pummel. And then my husband, God bless him, he'd seen this in the last one because they like press your hemorrhoids when you're giving birth. So they normally put like a compress. He started doing that. As I was shitting, I was like, get your finger off my arsehole. What are you doing? It was horrendous. And then she just shot out so fast. And there was only...
Well, in many ways, you were right though. You did need a poo.
I did need a poo. I needed the biggest poo of my life. And then we turned on, because, I was at the hypnobirthing, so everything was pitch black. So I've got the nurse with her Nokia 3210. She was really old school, this midwife. And she was like shining it on my fanny, trying to see what the hell was going on. Also getting covered in shit. And then when Edith was born, they turned the light on and like the midwife had poo all over her forehead. it. It was everywhere. I had literal brown shoes on of they're like, oh, birth is so beautiful and magical. It's the most beautiful experience I've been through.
I mean, no one talks about what that spicy curry is going to do, though, to your body to get it going.
I know.
You've literally you've angered your tummy, basically. You've given yourself a little bit of...
just pure diarrhoea, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that happens anyway when you give birth. Your body just releases everything because it needs to get it out. But, you know, couple that with the hottest curry that was on the menu. It's like...
God. Two ring of fires going on there.
But then again, that I got in the shower, washed me off, and then came, the bathroom looked like a scene out of Saw, but it was just with poo. And then it was all gone.
No.
I got myself ready, and I had to go into hospital for that one to have stitches because they weren't confident enough to do it there. So they were like, we're going to take you to hospital. It's fine. But yeah, got dressed, went back into the bathroom. It was like, nothing has happened here. You would never know. Just amazing. They do such a brilliant job.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How was your recovery the first time round?
The first time, not too bad, like from a physical perspective, but the breastfeeding was horrific. And and I think that for me, that was such a difficult period of my life. Looking back, you know, like retrospectively, it's probably after he was about, I think when he was 1 month old, that's when I really was at the lowest ebb because the breastfeeding hadn't worked out. And I was so set on it, unrealistically set on it, especially because a lot of the literature that I've been reading that sort of accompanied, you know, the home birth type thing was also about breastfeeding and just the philosophy around it, whatever. And I did feel this massive expectation, whether I put it on myself or whether it was like a societal thing or what, but I just felt this huge pressure of like, I have to do this. I have to breastfeed him. And it was horrendous. He just never, ever latched properly. And I had mastitis 6 times with him in a very short period of time, ended up in hospital every time with like the massive red tit. He had a tongue tie that didn't get sort of picked up until he was 3 weeks old. It was just awful. He never slept because he wasn't full. Just lots of stressful things that happened around the breastfeeding that also just left me feeling like such a failure.
But when you think about the amount of women who get themselves into such a low point,
I know,
trying to breastfeed, you know, I think there's a thing about perseverance, but there's also a thing about saying enough's enough.
Yeah, because also, you know, like, oh God, we went to all the lactation consultants and they're a bit mad. They're just a bit mad. Someone called them a tit wizard. I like that. the tit wizards. There's no alternative.
Yeah.
It's just that. And that's not helpful when you're in that place of real vulnerability. You don't need someone, a professional, to come in and be like, you just need to keep feeding them, you know? Like, it's just not helpful at all. So after all this experience, I did train to be a breastfeeding peer mentor.
Really?
Yeah, because I felt like so passionate about it. And like you're saying, wanted to just provide an alternative sort of narrative for women that breastfeeding. And I found this, I did find one amazing lactation consultant. And this is her whole thing is, you know, about being more sort of versatile with it. She completely supports combi feeding. She herself had a really difficult time feeding one of her children. And so I did her course. And she does a lot of hypno breastfeeding techniques, I suppose, about staying calm and, you know, tracks that you can listen to when you're breastfeeding and all the rest of it. And that was great. So I have supported a few women along the way. I haven't supported anyone recently. So anyone wants to drop me a line?
There you go, nice little plug for you there. Yeah. I had no idea you did that. That's
no,
amazing.
It was just a voluntary thing because you're a peer to peer mentor. So they, you know, it's just funny, isn't it, how you end up texting like strangers when you've just had a baby about the most obscure things. But yeah, I'd get a woman that's like just had a baby text me and be like, "I'm having a really hard time," and then we'd have a chat. And, you know, it's just nice to reassure them as well and be like, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. It's not you.
Yeah.
And like you said, just saying you don't have to do this. There's an alternative way to do it that isn't annihilating your mental health.
Absolutely. Do you feel like that period of time clouded everything else that was happening within that newborn stage?
Definitely. Definitely. Because I couldn't concentrate on anything else with him at all. And I went to this yoga class. I mean, I shouldn't have gone to a yoga class for one. I went to a yoga class with a baby, like my mum and baby. And every single woman in there was breastfeeding. And I had a bottle in my bag and then he wanted to have a drink. And no one had spoken to me even. Like when I walked in, everyone was really unfriendly. They were already in their little cliques. And then I got my bottle out and the disapproving looks and glares from these women. And in the end, I just left because Oliver was getting really fractious and was crying. And I got in the car and I absolutely bawled my eyes out and just thought, I'm so inadequate. Like that whole failure thing again. And just they'd made me feel shame for like feeding my baby with a bottle, which is just, it's so ridiculous, isn't it?
I think our minds are so unfair to us as well, though, because I can remember going to classes and being like, I'm going to go there early so I can feed him in the car before I go in because I don't want to breastfeed in front of other people. And then, oh gosh, now he needs to be breastfed, but I've got the dummy in the bag. But if I get the dummy out, then I'm going to be judged for the dummy. You know, there's so many different things that actually, I wonder how much of that is maybe little judgments that we've had formulate in our brain pre-parenthood that then get pushed out when we have a baby. So much for me anyway, so much of what I was experiencing was the judgment that pre-baby me was placing on myself.
Definitely. I mean, can we just give a moment to the dummy, because that is the best invention that's ever been made. But I was so anti it. My mum's like really working class, but she's such a snob.
Really?
Yeah, like such a snob. And so like a dummy, she'd be like, oh no, you can't give a baby a dummy. No, absolutely. You four, never. I breastfed you four. So you know what mums are like. They are a bit shit though, aren't they? Like, you know, you're like, can you not just say the thing that I don't want you to say? Just say the thing that I need you to say. Always. But yeah, she was so anti-dummy. So I think I definitely had that in my head of like, you know, old Trish being like, got a dummy, have you? But I'm telling you now, I love the dummy. I would still let my kids have it if they wanted it.
Well, even that though, I find it fascinating looking back at my relationship with the dummy and my kids, because my first, he got to 6 months and I was like, and we're taking it away. You know, we're not going back. And then the second, he was two by the time it was taken away. And I got so worked up with how I was going to take it away. Because I started using it where it was only to go to bed.
Yeah, we did that.
And then he'd been poorly and with his nan. So he had a dummy all day because he was poorly. I thought, right, okay, we're going to have to nip this in the bud. Or I know, the visual that I had was he had found the other dummies. So he was sat with two dummies in his mouth, like some Tom and Jerry. Do you remember the Tom and Jerry when he has all the cigarettes weirdly in his mouth? It was like that, but with dummies and another dummy in his hand. And I was like, this has got to stop. So at two, he got rid of his. And I can't even remember with Max. I feel like it was such a non-thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think the experience of the other two of kind of going, it will go at some point.
That's
it.
I think that's the other thing. It's that whole, like, milestones, things like that. Your kid's going to do it at some point. Just don't worry about it. I mean, I can tell you now, anyone that's listening is thinking, oh, God, my kid's size is a dummy. Oliver was 3 1/4 when he gave it up.
I think Max was around then.
Yeah, and we tried to get rid of it 3 months before when he was 3. So I was like, he's got to stop having it. He's 3. But he loved it. And he used to go to sleep with like a halo of dummies around his head so that if it fell out, he'd just reach out and get it.
Exactly. Because it stops you having to go in for it. So as long as soon as they can reach for them, just put them all in there.
It's great. Yeah. That's it. And we'd done the whole, the dummy fairies come in, la, la, la. So we did the whole, like, you know, ritual of she's left you a present and then leave your dummies on the tree and just put them in the garden. And then he got into bed and he had his little present and he was like, so wait a minute, I've not got the dummies, I've just got this. So, yeah. And he literally lobbed the present across the room and was like, dum dum. So I was like, okay, I'll get them back. And I went and got them back for him. But then he just literally gave it up without us even doing anything at Christmas. He said, oh, I'll leave them for Father Christmas. And he did. And he never asked for it ever again. So they just give it up when they don't want it.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're still 12 and using a dummy, then there's an issue there.
You were talking earlier about losing yourself in the breastfeeding in early motherhood. Have there been steps along, you know, the last 7 years where you have felt yourself coming back? And what have you done to kind of try and get yourself back? Or has it just happened?
Yeah, I mean, so I when Oliver was about 6 months old, I was on maternity leave and I was very lonely. That was a big thing of like the loneliness of I didn't really make any friends when I was pregnant with him. I didn't have anyone local to me. We'd like moved to an area where we didn't know anyone and it was very isolating. And my friend said to me, because I always loved the interiors, the house stuff, she said, why don't you start an Instagram account? And I was like, what the fuck would I do on there? Because I didn't really use social media. And she said, oh, you can just put pictures of your house or like show DIY tutorials or something like that because you're so like nifty with stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay. So I went onto Instagram and I signed up for it. And then that's what I did. I just started putting pictures of my house, but I always talked about my day in a very, oh, well, another trip to the park. What a fucking load of bullshit, you know, that kind of thing. So, and talked about motherhood in a very casual way. And it was interesting because actually I think the pictures of my home became very secondary to what the content that I was putting on there. But I think doing that, having that space as well where I was connecting as well, because that is the thing about social media. There is a real sense of connection because there's smaller groups of people there. Mm-hmm. And so I would then be having chats with people in my DMs. They'd be writing comments, whatever. Then like I went to a couple of events that were all interior stuff, not the mum scene at all. Met some really nice women there. I just started to feel a little bit like, oh, well, this is something that's about me. It's not about me as a mum.
But it's that thing, isn't it? I think you putting out their stuff would have made other people that were feeling lonely feel less alone, which in turn makes you feel less alone.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just a lovely big cycle.
Yeah.
Let's all come together and feel less alone because kids are shit. Yeah, that was it. that is basically my tagline, I think.
You've also made the decision over the last few years to go sober.
That's correct.
How has that impacted, you know, motherhood and your response to stuff?
So I've been sober for 9 months now, and it was a decision that I came to over probably about 4 years. So after I had Edith, I think, you know, when you have, once you've got one kid, you think one kid is hard, and then you have another one, you're like, what the hell was I thinking? That was not hard. This is horrific, especially if they're close in age, because, you know, I had like a 2.5-year-old and a newborn, which was carnage. But I think I have sort of like gone backwards and forwards with this idea of being sober for such a long time and done little stints of sobriety, but really not very long, like maybe like 3 weeks here, then I'd have a drink, then I'd do another 2 weeks, all the rest of it.
Do you think part of that as well is we are in a culture where we'll put the kids to bed and we'll have a glass of wine?
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's something we've talked about so much as well, or like a gin or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's kind definitely.
Of... It's part of the conversation.
It is. And you know what? It was a part of my conversation online for a long time. And I think that's probably why, you know, a proportion of women really related to me, because I would have a glass of wine and be like, oh, fucking hell, I've had a shit day. Let's have a glass of wine, all the rest of it. And make, like, because I do like musical parodies and things like make musical parodies about booze and, you know, and I don't think I ever analysed it at the time. But now that I'm sober and I've read loads of like sober literature and all the rest of it, I do, realise that that was massively feeding into the narrative of normalising alcohol in motherhood as like a method of coping. And so that's how I drank too, you know. And then when my dad got sick, I just used alcohol as a emotional crutch to essentially, it was to block out the pain of what was going on.
Yeah.
I was a grey area drinker. And I think a lot of women are where I was. I'm not an alcoholic. I haven't had any rock bottom experiences, really, of being like, fuck my life. Like, I have to change. It wasn't like that. It was more just sort of crept in, I think. And it just made me feel like shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, my anxiety was so bad. And the anxiety was really outweighing the small amount of fun that I had when I was drinking. I've been sitting with my feelings so much more, especially my dad dying. I don't think I would have coped nearly half as well with him dying if I hadn't have been sober, because the feelings come up and they're really painful. But rather than going, quick, get a vino down ya, you know, and then feeling terrible for like the next 3 days, I've just had to deal with it and process it. And honestly, for me, it's like one of the best decisions that I've ever made in my life.
Really?
Yeah. And there's so many benefits to it that you don't even realise. But with parenting, I'm so much more patient. So much more patient. And that was definitely like, you know, just feeling annoyed, feeling like, oh God, for God's sake, why are you doing this again with the kids? Like, just even if you're not even on the day that you're hungover, but just, I think it just makes you a bit more aggy and like have less patience because you feel a bit shit, don't you? So that's got, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still get very impatient with them, but it's not like it used to be. But in terms of friendships, motherhood, it's just a little bit jarring, maybe. I don't know about your sort of mum friendship group, but it's always been well centred around booze. Mine has. Like, we go out, and we don't go out very often, but we go out and we get blottoed, you know, like everyone's having a drink. So that's been an interesting adjustment. I don't have a problem with it, but often you'll get someone having like a couple of drinks and then they start probing you like, so why aren't you drinking? Oh yeah, but you're not an alcoholic, so just have a drink, you know. It's like, fuck off. that's hard, but you just get used to it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could write a letter on motherhood, on being a mum, who would it be to and what would you say?
Oh my God, that's a bit deep, isn't it?
Well, oh, we went deep straight away.
Yeah, we did go deep. Well, I did actually write a book on it. It's called Welcome to Motherhood, Bitches. So why don't you go and read that? And that's the whole letter in a book form. Oh, I just think I would say, what is this, if they've got kids or not kids?
Any woman.
Any woman. Any,
just about motherhood. Doesn't have to be, it can be to whoever you want about motherhood.
I think it's an absolutely wild roller coaster with so many, twists and turns, and to just never have any expectations. I feel like that's a good piece of advice. Don't have any expectations, because then you will only ever be pleasantly surprised rather than horrifically disappointed.
We've finished the podcast with you completing three sentences. The first one is, being a mum means...
never getting to shit alone. I don't know if this is supposed to be profound.
No, this is perfect. This
okay.
is perfect.
Okay, I'll write this
Since
down.
Since having children, I...
have never appreciated the value of sleep and personal space.
And finally, I'm happy when...
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm happy when I'm in a spa on my own, miles away from my children, but I know that they're safe and I get to just have a night away. That's probably when I'm happiest.
Yeah.
Also when I'm with the kids, obviously, but, you know.
Victoria, thank you so much. I've loved this chat.
Oh, it's been so lovely. Thank you so much. Am I allowed to plug something?
Yes, you can.
Go plug. Because I've got my Rebel Mums Club that I run,
yes.
which I feel is perfect for your audience, because I basically set it up. It's an online community where we have sort of a WhatsApp group, and then we also have these in-person events, and we do a retreat every year. And I set it up because of that sense of loneliness that I talked about earlier, about just feeling, you know, like it is really hard to meet mum friends that you genuinely get on with for the sake of like them being them rather than just then your kids like each other, you know. And so I created it for that reason, and it is the luscious community of women. They make me feel so sort of supported and held and validated and everything else, like, and our events are the best, and there's loads of us that are sober, So I know that like can put people off thinking, oh, it's going to be really busy. It's not at all. Loads of us are sober. That's where I've got my sober slag support group from, is from the Rebel Mums Club. And yeah, it's just, if you want to come and have a look at it, I've got a website. It's www.rebelmumsclub.com.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.